This episode was uploaded Saturday, January 21st, 2023, and you're listening to episode 19 of the 5x5 Room RPG Podcast.
Holoseko is a dungeon master, competitive trading card game player, and most importantly, a friend. Today, I'll be asking Hollis some questions to help you, our audience, get to know him a little bit better.
The running time for this episode is 21 minutes.
Welcome to the 5x5 Room. I'm Jeremy.
And I am Hollis.
And today we're going to let you get to know us a little better. Well, one of us right now. I will be doing an interview of Hollis, and you're going to tell us all about your life of gaming.
My entire life of gaming?
Yeah. Like, well, you know what? I've got some questions, so.
No preparation at all. No planning.
They just popped into my head. So hold on. Let me pull up the document. So let's start simple. Where did you start with tabletop gaming?
I have never felt older. Thank you for asking such a question. I was around 17, 18, and I was a mall rat, a pretty heavy mall rat. I would go there every weekend with my friends, and we'd basically be there all day. And I had a chance to meet someone that worked at a restaurant there at the mall, and we just started hanging out, talking about nerd-related activities, and then all of a sudden, Dungeons & Dragons got brought up. And before you know it, I was playing in my first game, understanding the game mechanics. It was really old. It was a D&D 2nd edition.
I know you also played a lot of card games even before that.
Yeah, actually. So I'm really big on collectible card games and playing those games competitively. It's kind of a separate passion, a separate hobby of mine. But even back then when I was young and playing Pokemon as the card game, I would see the D&D books and I would go grab them when the league was over and just rifle through some pages. I had no idea what I was looking at, really, but it looked really interesting at that time.
Do you think card gaming has had an effect on how you run or play tabletop RPGs?
A little bit, yeah. Aside from also wanting to put separate systems in my games that include cards, they kind of sort of tied together because of things like the art style. A lot of the games I play, the art style was kind of similar. You may look at some things in D&D and immediately think, about Magic the Gathering. And of course, you know, fast forward, you know, a couple of decades from me looking into that, you know, there's now effectively, you know, a magic system in the game.
Yeah. I mean, we've even got like a few of the magic settings.
Yeah.
From Magic the Gathering, that is, in D&D.
Right. Like Ravnica, right?
Yeah. Ravnica, Strixhaven. Room for more, too. Are there any lessons that you learned in your early years as a player or a game master that you think you still carry with you today?
Every year, the more I play the game, I come to realize that I have not always been good at this. And I think that there's more wisdom now on this end of time versus when I started playing. If there was one big thing I carried with me, it's that your table is going to only ever be as good as the player sitting at it. So things about the mechanics and about campaign design and even down to role-playing and acting, those are going to come later with more time and practice. But I really think that just having your friends, people that you care about, you love seeing week after week at your table is really what makes the game special.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it's a big part of learning any new thing. And it's tough because, you know, when we think of a game, we don't often think of it as like a new skill, but you only get better by doing it.
And like the characters you'll play, as the bonds with your friends actually get deeper and stronger, you'll just find yourself enjoying a game like Dungeons & Dragons more and more because there's more togetherness.
Okay, well, what are your major inspirations when it comes to creating or running a game?
I'm really big on high fantasy. I know that seems kind of cliche with it, but I do like it. I like it as a setting. I think it's gritty and beautiful and dirty and pretty. You know, I think it's all of those things. I also really like cyberpunk style themes, like a lot of other players. I tend to prefer darker campaign settings versus more lighthearted ones. But I think that's because the genres I enjoy reading and the games I enjoy playing are also sort of like that.
Do you have any particular inspirations you wanted to shout out?
There's an old, old game I used to play called The Longest Journey. And I know I've talked about this game at length before. But it's a game that came out in the 90s. And it was made by I think it was written by Ragnar Tornquist. And you follow a woman named April Ryan as she goes from being this sort of fledgling artist struggling with her place in life And in the end, she turns out to be maybe the most important person in the world. And at some point, that also gets snatched away from her. And it's a story that is very much steeped in fantasy. It's got a whole separate world that you get to visit and explore. And it's kind of intriguing and enchanting. And then to watch the character go through so much and then have this sort of heartache at the end, it was the first time I really felt something in gaming. And so that stuck with me. And I wanted to make sure that my games would occasionally have events like that.
Can you think of any times that in particular has informed your world building or your game mastering style?
Absolutely. The number of times I give players an NPC that I enjoy playing as and has helped the party, all to maybe put them at risk of being taken away from the party and to watch that reaction. As silly as it may seem, I enjoy watching my players kind of spin the wheels and protect this NPC that is not just the character they're rolling that evening.
It's true. It's very fun. So the most recent game that I played that you ran was set in Rakutal. Could you tell me a bit about your Rakutal setting?
Yeah, sure. I wanted to do a setting that very much reminded me of the game that I had just mentioned of The Longest Journey, except I wanted to be a bit more literal with like how the worlds were divided. So I said, let's take an entire planet, if you will. Let's chop it in half to where you have a set of continents that only you can get to with this unknown barrier. And what if one day that barrier dissipated? It was just gone. All of a sudden, there were all these new threats that had come to the world. And then vice versa, what if you were present or there right before the barrier collapsed? And I wanted to use that as the primary setting for the game that would really push exploration. It would push exploration more than any other game that I'd ever crafted or tried to make before. Often my games are heavy on narrative, less so on the exploration part. And I really wanted to actually lend the narrative elements and the things that I love to the part of the exploration I think is so interesting. Discovering something brand new, describing something with amazing flourish. I think for me, the video games I play tend to be these fantastical looking things. And so I like my games to also kind of fit that as well.
This is great because you've led me into a further question. I'm going to have to jump down a little bit. But I know that you take the three pillars approach when running games. Could you describe the three pillars to me and what you think about them?
Certainly. So, of course, the first one being exploration. To me, this is all about the sort of understanding and nuances that come with discovering new people, new things, new places. Then there's this sort of role play or the acting element, if you will. I think that this is the opportunity for the players to really kind of show their own chops at acting, to show their own chops at putting themselves in the shoes of a different kind of character. And then, of course, the last pillar is combat. To me, I think this is the one I struggle the most with. I know that combat is often, for a lot of players, just roll the dice, add the number until we get to the final number that puts the HP on zero. But I think this is where I've had the biggest improvement as a DM lately, is making the combat more interesting, not necessarily just a meat grinder. You know, it's not just about getting the monsters to zero. There's some new added elements. Often I look at combat now more like a puzzle. It doesn't have to be a necessarily intricate one. In fact, sometimes too intricate of a puzzle is a very bad thing for your table. But I like having a combat that has multiple pieces to it and require the players to do more than just reduce the numbers down as low as you can.
I agree. I think that's very very good way to keep people engaged, especially when they're just kind of, you know, trading hit points back and forth. So we talked about Rakutal. Do you have any pre-made campaign settings that you're a fan of, either as a player or as a GM?
Everybody that's talked to me lately in the past, I don't know, decade understands my complete love affair with anything Curse of Strahd. Curse of Strahd, Expedition to Castle Ravenloft. I even have some older Ravenloft modules that I try to draw info from that can use later in like Strahd run games or Ravenloft run games. Love it. I think it's a phenomenal system each time it's been printed. I think that it has a ton of depth, a ton of character and world building. It really, as a new DM, will teach you what it's like to have this amazing, intricate number of things set up for your game in preparation for what could happen that evening. It's really a phenomenal module. Beyond that, a lot of the content I play tends to end up being homebrewed content. It tends to be things that you, Jeremy, you've designed, or our friends Ryan and Jackie, or that I've designed. Most of the worlds that I go into that are crafted by the other players, for example, Remnants is a campaign that every single person in our friend group remembers. And that was Matt's first opportunity, first shot at DMing a game.
Yeah.
And what a phenomenal run.
Oh, yeah. Very memorable. But back to Ravenloft for a little bit. Is there anything in Raven that Ravenloft offers that you feel other settings don't?
Three major things come to mind that make Ravenloft stand out. The first thing is that the villain has a degree of modularity in that the options available to you as the villain could range from a number of things that can go from crazed, not planned, or incredibly well thought out, incredibly brilliant. You get that option. So modularity is one. The second one is just the setting itself and the darkness in it. Every moment is a bad moment for the players for the most part. Even good people aren't really good people. The players will always question who they should be trusting, including each other. And I think that tension that you get to add to a table really makes some amazing games. And the last one is the lore. If you're the kind of person that enjoys a lot of storytelling in your D&D game, and you want to have a lot of random pieces out, but are part of a bigger picture, a bigger tapestry, it offers that in spades in terms of ancient relics or items that may or may not be relevant to bigger plot lines that happened in the past that fill out the story of what is, you know, Strahd. And I think that that is what really sets it apart.
If you could change one thing about Ravenloft, what would it be?
Chillborn zombies out of the expedition to Castle Ravenloft.
Really?
Yes.
Are they your favorite?
I loved using them until all of my players did not.
Player is always right, huh?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, speaking of that, do you have a preference between being a game master or being a player?
It's the easiest question probably on this entire list. 100% I enjoy being a game master more. The benefit you are given as a result of being a game master is that you are the person that gets to facilitate fun. And I truly find so much happiness and joy out of doing the thing that my friends enjoy. It is something that I didn't really know about myself until I started running more games. But to craft something with help with the players and have them leave the table going, hey, that was really fun. I really enjoyed that. There's no greater feeling in gaming. To be able to bring fun to your table and to your friends is a great feeling.
This is why everybody knows that Christmas is your favorite holiday.
Everyone does know this. Yes.
Because you just love giving so much.
I do.
Well, I guess as a game master, what would make up your optimal player?
That's an amazing question. And I hope my players don't get upset at me for answering this. But okay, my optimal player, here we go. The optimal player would probably be someone who doesn't care so much about the mechanics of the game. They care more about crafting a character that's interesting. So they won't be worried that by not building optimally, they will be stifled or maybe the combat itself will be entirely undone as a result of their choices. They trust that the game will work out even if their numbers aren't the min-max. They are likely going to be decent at roleplay. And in fact, even if they're not decent at roleplay, they're going to try to roleplay anyway as that character. And that means so much more than actually being good at it, I think. And lastly, I think I'd want them to craft where they're from. I think I'd want them to go into a lot of detail. Jeremy, you're pretty close. I got to be honest. I almost feel like you've crafted this question for yourself.
Well, thank you very much. But let's try to turn the lenses around and say, if you're a player, do you have like an optimal tabletop gaming experience?
Absolutely. I think running a game off the rails is the best kind of experience for me as a player. I tend to be the person that is more focused on the mechanics making sense, but also telling players, ignore them for a second. Just what would you like to do? I think that my preferred session is the kind of game where I, as a player, can just do that. The DM is comfortable enough at the table to allow me just to make the choice that I want to make, not necessarily always make the smartest choice by the numbers, and still have that turn out to be something cool. That's the kind of DM I try to emulate because I know that that's the kind of thing I enjoy.
I do think it is tough to be that kind of DM too, because you have to really feel comfortable with what you're doing to feel comfortable breaking the rules.
Oh yeah, absolutely. For newer DMs, I don't think it's commonplace that they're going to actually break so far out of the rules because it's hard to know where you reel it back in. But I think as you get more and more, you know, sessions under your belt, it becomes pretty clear that giving players a lot of freedom is really what brings them a lot of joy. So it just comes with that practice and territory.
Players also just love breaking the rules.
They do.
Like anytime that you can do something and it is in their favor against the rules, they love it.
There's a reason why players love to feat lucky, right?
Yeah. They get to tell the game no.
Exactly.
So back to being a game master, approximately how long do you like to spend prepping for a session?
This has changed a lot. When I was younger, I tried to spend the minimal amount of time prepping because I enjoyed playing more than I actually enjoyed taking notes and getting the game organized. But session after session after session, each game that I played with my friends, it was becoming more apparent that it was kind of hard to keep track of it all in my head. You can only do so much, right? In the end, what I decided to do was put a bigger focus on the note keeping and make sure that I track everything. And as I started to do that more and more, it just improved me being a game master overall.
Are there any tools or techniques that you frequently rely on when either prepping or running your game?
In terms of tools I rely on, OneNote. OneNote was huge for a couple of reasons. It allowed you to easily take any kind of text note, but you can just take a screenshot of something, throw it in there, and just mark it as that session for the day or the week. I always try to have a little bit of ambiance, so maybe some sounds, or if I can have them, some candles or some lights that change color. I think that enhances the game a lot. I'm a huge fan of digital components. Always, always, always. Even if it's just a fillable Excel sheet and not the sheet from D&D Beyond, I love anything that helps tracking my character details and player details much easier.
Yeah, I mean, all that stuff is super helpful, especially D&D Beyond.
It's really actually a good app. I know this sounds like we should be sponsored, but it's actually the most useful tool I've had in years to run a game.
It is one of those things where I've like forgotten like how long it's been since I've played a D&D 5 game without D&D Beyond, and I've tried to like make a character without it, and I go, oh, why? It's been a long time.
I remember back and forth. You would have all these like reactions that would happen as a result of another player triggering something. And you would end up in the scenario where you would be asking, wait a minute, when is yours trigger versus when theirs triggers? Except if we had had D&D Beyond then, we would have easily had all those character sheets immediately in the tabs. We'd be able to see like exactly what the text says. Is it a power bonus or is it just a bonus? You know, it would have been so easy to compare.
Fourth edition had a pretty nice character builder, but it's true that it didn't have direct links to all the text. So when you needed rulings like that, it was not going to get the job done.
Huge time saver for sure.
But I think I'm getting to the winding down point now. So I was curious, do you have any particularly memorable moments that you'd like to share, either from games long past or more recent ones?
In one of the first games I ever ran, our friend Brian was also playing in it. And I remember him finding a chest that after a close inspection was revealed to have a series of goblin traps, if triggered. However, it was up high from a drop, but it was up high at a raised platform where these goblins had been basically sleeping in this within this cavern. He finds the chest and decides, well, I can't open it because I failed to pick that lock. So he then decides, I'll just toss it right over off the side. What's the worst that could happen? It's only my party down there with the goblin traps that will explode upon the...
It's true. We were all down there.
And earlier you asked about my preferred kind of player. The fact that he did that is the kind of thing that I, for sure, my preferred player would do. They wouldn't get the job done and they would do what their character wants, but they would absolutely cause a little bit of chaos at the table in the process.
Brian was always great at causing chaos.
Very good. Very, very great player.
A wonderful story. Is there anything else that you particularly would like to shout out to our listeners about yourself?
I don't have too much more to say about myself, to be honest. I will, however, say a couple things about my players and the games that I've gotten a chance to play. I think that I quite honestly have the best players in the world. And I don't mean just the players I have now. I mean all the players. That is you, that's our friends, Jeremy, Ryan, Jackie. I know the list goes on and on, but it's pretty clear to me that all of my games really turn out so well. Not because of any of the amount of planning that I do, but because the people at the table are all on board with going on this journey with me. And it's not just the things that I create, it's that each time I get a chance to sit down at the table, I am forever impressed by the creations of my friends and what they're able to hand to me and trust me to play with and to make an amazing, fun experience with them. And it's really humbling. And I, you know, at this point, I guess really it's a big thank you to them. I want to say thank you to all my players and friends that have played in my games and have gone through on these adventures with me. It's been a really good time.
Well, you're welcome on all of their behalfs from me.
Thank you, Jeremy. I knew you would get them.
I do what I can. But I hope you guys have liked getting to know Hollis a little better. Maybe we'll see another one of these that works in reverse.
Oh, don't think you're going to get away. You absolutely have your time coming.
It's unfortunate. I'm very long-winded, so it'll probably be the longest episode we've ever recorded.
Then that's what it is, Jeremy. It is what it is.
But on that note, thank you, Hollis, for answering my questions. And thank you, all of our listeners, for listening in to another episode.
I've said thank you enough, so I'll just say have a good night.